Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
In 1967, we were counted. In 2017, we seek to be heard. Well, that's part of the Statement from the Heart, issued by Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander representatives after a constitutional meeting at Uluru in May. Well, the question to ask now is, are we prepared to listen? Statement from the Heart highlighted the continuing inequity of Aboriginal Australian experience. It seeks constitutional reform that's not just symbolic, but makes a real difference. In part, the statement says, we seek constitutional reforms to empower our people to take a rightful place in our own country. When we have power over our destiny, our children will flourish. They will walk in two worlds, and their culture will be a gift to their country. At the heart of their proposals is a Makarrata Commission, a body to make agreements between our First Nations people and governments, also a mechanism for telling, and more importantly, acknowledging the effects of white settlement on Aboriginal people. We wanted to find out more about the Makarrata process. Is it similar to the experience recently of South Africa with its Truth and Reconciliation Commission? To help us go deeper on this question, we went to Ray Minikin. He's an Aboriginal pastor, a Cubby Cubby man whose family has been deeply involved in the Stolen Generations and efforts to bring black and white Australians together. I began by asking Ray Minikin about the Makarrata.
It comes from Yolngu nation groups, group nations up there in the Arnhem Land area. Mm-hmm. It's their language. And for them, it meant a formal process of working together, like a treaty, coming together after a struggle. That's what it means.
Yes, Makarrata means coming together after a struggle. Now, there's a certain approach to how that all plays out.
In a certain approach, definitely, yeah, you have to come together and work out what those differences are, what you need to sit down and iron out any of those kind of challenges that are there, and then figure out how you're going to make those agreements more formalised so that there won't be any more struggles or conflicts.
Now, in the way that I remember it being told to me, and I must admit it was a while ago, I seem to remember that some of the grievances were written down, perhaps on sticks, and those sticks were burnt. Is that all buried?
In the past, that could have been the process in which their protocols and their cultural practices would have helped them to work through those kinds of things as a symbolic measure, and that would have been quite appropriate at that time.
Hmm. Now, I know that a great many Aboriginal people are, in fact, Christians, as you and your family are. And so can you explain to me how the forgiveness, as we would have on the cross, for example, how that mixes with, marries with the Aboriginal notions about forgiveness? Firstly, is forgiveness or reconciliation through the Makarrata, is that something that's widespread throughout Aboriginal nations?
Oh, definitely, yes, yes. I mean, that's just, there were always ways in which, if there was any kind of conflicts or tensions between tribes, they always came together and worked through those in this language anyways, with the Makarrata, or in other particular areas, they would still come together and figure out how to work, live together and share together.
And so has it been easy for Christian Aboriginals to embrace that as part of their own Christian walk?
Look, for me in particular, I can only speak for myself, and I think for a number of other Aboriginal Christians, there's no problem with the message of the gospel. The message is not the problem. It's really the messenger and his methodologies that are the major issues.
You mean the white men?
Well, if you want to put it in that language, I wouldn't put it in that language, but it's the ways in which the messenger has delivered the message.
Yes.
And not only delivered the message, but the cultural baggage that came with that.
Hmm.
Which wasn't a part of the message.
Tell me more about that.
Well, for us to become Christians, we had to become white fellas. And we had to learn this language, which we're speaking now, in terms of our communication with our Creator, and that was English. And so we had to give up all of that. The other language you would use for this is that the messenger used replacement theology in order to work through how we became, in their eyes, true followers of Jesus.
What do you mean by replacement theology?
Well, it replaced everything, our language, our culture, even took our children, our land, the whole lot. We lost everything through that process. And that wasn't just only the church, it worked hand in hand with government.
Given that, it's remarkable that the message wasn't completely rejected.
Oh, like I said, it's not the message, the problem, it's the messenger and his methodologies.
Yes, yes. Yes. So
we can really, you know, being a spiritual people, we know that our Creator talks to us continuously. He didn't stop speaking to us back there in 2000 when Jesus died and rose again. He continues that dialogue with us, even up into this day and age. And then even our 50 or 60,000 years of history, He never ever stopped communicating with us and us with Him. So that's just a normal, natural part of our spirituality.
Yes, I'm rather jealous is perhaps the wrong word, but I do wish that I had the same sense of God speaking to me through creation as you certainly do as a people.
Yeah, well, the land is like a Bible to us.
Yeah,
because it does speak to us. But also, we do have our elders in our community. And they're the custodians of the knowledge that has been passed on from time immemorial, and they pass on that cultural knowledge to us as well. But in today's world, it makes it a little bit more difficult when we've got it two mixed messages here in terms of how that message has been both communicated and received.
On Open House, our guest is Pastor Ray Minikin. He's an Aboriginal pastor in Glebe. His original heritage is Cubby Cubby and Goring Goring. And as your daughter Larissa was telling us a couple of weeks ago, you have both Aboriginal and South Sea Islander, South Sea Islander heritage. Your grandfather was brought to Australia as a forced labourer?
That's right, yeah, from Ambrim Island.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, the name Minikin comes from that particular island group, so it is a part of my history and heritage, yes.
And when I say brought to, he was stolen, he was enslaved.
Slavery.
It's part of our history that we don't talk about much. When you look at New Zealand and you see what they've managed to achieve through a different type of process, is that the sort of thing that Aboriginal people are talking about when they speak of the Makarrata leading to a treaty? Or being a treaty.
That would be the process, or one of the goals of it is to have that. But just to remember, I was listening in on the conversation when you mentioned Samuel Marsden. He was the bishop out here at Parramatta at that time in 1892, and he said this about my people. He says that the Aborigines are the most degraded of the human race. The time has not yet arrived for them to receive the great blessings of civilization and the knowledge of Christianity. That was in 1892.
Ouch.
And then, but it goes on further than that. I mean, you have to also look at when they were discussing the beginning points of the federal constitution, that an MP from Tasmania, King O'Malley was his name, he says that he compared us to the Maori people, but he said that there is no scientific evidence that the Aborigine is a human being at all. And that's at the beginning points of this constitutional process.
Yes.
And so that's why a lot of our people rejected the whole constitutional changes and or recognition within the Constitution, because if you have a document that is based and grounded in racism, why would you want to put yourself inside that particular racism and become absorb that kind of biases as well?
Right, that's very understandable. And what a dreadful experience your people have had. I'm trying to find something else to latch onto that might help us move forward. And I suppose there's a 20th century example, and that would be the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa. Again, is that the type of process that might be helpful in Australia?
Yes, well, it also happened in Canada because of the residential schools over there, and I know a lot of our stolen generations have been calling for a Truth and Reconciliation Commission so that they could tell their stories, and then there could be some kind of way in which the commission can then, from that commission, can work out how we can both work on the healing sides, not just of the victims, but also of the perpetrators, because both needs healing here in this whole process. And I think that's the process that was taken in South Africa. It wasn't just only healing for those victims of the South African government, but also how do you heal those who were the ones who committed those particular crimes? Hmm. And how do you forgive them? And in the truth and reconciliation process over there, a lot of those particular people who had committed those crimes found forgiveness through that.
Yes, well, we're going through a particular process involving the Royal Commission, and many of the victims that have been spoken about in Kinchella homes and other places were, of course, Aboriginal children.
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, I work with the Stolen Generations, and with the Kinchella Boys Home, I was the one who helped to establish that home back in the year 2000, and the organisation for them, anyway, to help them to work through that healing. And I work with other Stolen Generation members, too, and I carry a lot of their painful stories in my bones, and so it actually it's good to see the Royal Commission come into play here and do some things, but I don't know how the governments are going to respond. And if there was something that I would like to see happen, but this is just me as an Aboriginal pastor, I think the New South Wales government, all the other governments after this Royal Commission, should set up a special government department to look after this issue, like they did for the Olympics, you know, a special, you know, 20-year or whatever it is service, so that all the victims of the abuses that they experienced in these homes could be dealt with. Mm. Because it wasn't just only sexual abuse; it was cultural abuse, it was mental abuse, it was spiritual abuse, it was physical abuse. Everything you can imagine. And when you're removed even from your family and you're estranged from your mother and your father and your other siblings, there's all these other traumas that you face in your own life in terms of your identity and who you are.
Yes.
The government needs to respond appropriately, and if they set up a government department for that and poured the money through that it might be the best way in which they can handle the incredible demands of the victims themselves, as perhaps even the perpetrators.
Well, right, when it comes to this question of reconciliation, when it comes to the request for constitutional recognition and a Makarrata Commission to bring these stories to the open so we can own each other's histories, perhaps, and come together in that way, you've seen some of the responses so far, a little bit lukewarm. But are you hopeful that this could be the conversation, that this could be the time?
It depends on how we define hope. If it's the Augustinian definition, where Augustine said, hope has two beautiful daughters, anger and courage. Anger to say that we're not going to accept the things that are, and the courage to change them so that they can be better. So if we go on that kind of definition, then we need to have the anger within ourselves as a nation to actually deal with these particular historical wrongdoings and historical traumas that Indigenous peoples face, so that we can have the courage to face the future with a much more, I wouldn't say a reconciled future, because I'm not I'm not what you would call a promoter of reconciliation in that particular context, because if we take the meaning of reconciliation to its defined meaning anyways, it means that we're reconciling to something that was committed back there. Well, if we go back and reconcile ourselves to 1788, then we're territorious again.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, what's the better word? What's your word?
What's my word? Yeah. I think it's just truth and reconciliation. We need the truth first.
Okay.
Truth must come before any kind of agreements can be reached. And perhaps the word treaty or agreements would be a much more better language to use. That's why I think our people have chosen the right word in terms of Makarrata, where we can, after struggles and after conflicts and after tensions, we can come together and start to work through some of those issues. It's not going to happen overnight, But at least this generation of people had this incredible opportunity to put in place something that their children and their grandchildren can be proud of when they look back on our Australian history.
And I hope we can achieve it in our time. Look, Ray, thank you so much for being with us tonight. I've really appreciated the conversation.
Okay, mate. Bless you.